Hello and welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Galen Druk, and this is our Michael Cohen hearing reaction podcast. President Trump's former lawyer, Michael Cohen, testified to the House Oversight Committee today. He answered questions about Trump's communications with Roger Stone relating to WikiLeaks, about hush money payments to Stormy Daniels, about possible tax fraud, about his own personal credibility, and plenty more. So let's break down what's new, what's an actual legal liability for Trump, if anything, and of course, the politics of all of it. And here with me to do that, our editor-in-chief, Nate Silver. Hey, Nate, how's it going?
It's going well. I spent all day watching television. I guess it is my job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How was it?
I'm one of those people where if I like go to a museum, like after the first hour, my eyes start to glaze over.
So that's how the hearing felt?
Lose concentration. Well, I think actually part of the problem is I think it got more interesting
at the end.
Toward the end. Because in part because you have all these old fogies who like are not asking particularly sharp questions or grandstanding, right? And then toward the end, you had from, I think, both Republicans and probably more so Democrats, more sharp lines of questioning, more interesting things to say, more differentiation. And so I think people should have tuned in for the second half.
All right. Well, we'll get more into that momentarily. But also here with us are senior writer Perry Bacon Jr. Hey, Perry, how's it going?
Hey, good. Good to be with you.
Thanks for joining us. And also, we have 538 contributor and legal reporter Amelia Thompson DeVoe. Hey, Amelia, how's it going?
Good. Hey, Galen.
Let's start with you, Amelia, the person who's helped us track what kind of legal liability is on the table for Trump. Did we learn anything new regarding any possible criminality in anything that Trump did as either a candidate or as president today?
Well, so we did get a clarification on one important thing, which is the question of what happened with Michael Cohen's testimony, previous testimony to Congress, and whether the president directed him to lie. There had been reporting from BuzzFeed saying that Trump had told him to lie to Congress, which is a crime. And then there was a, you know, sort of immediate question about whether that reporting was true. And it seems based on Cohen's testimony that it was sort of partially true. Trump didn't come up to him and say, hey, I want you to lie to Congress. So it's not clear what my role was in the Trump Tower Moscow deal at a moment when it wouldn't look good for me politically. But he sort of told Cohen to do it in not so many words, in an indirect way. And the question, the extent to which that is illegal, little bit more up in the air, but it's important to have sort of that clarification, at least based on Cohen's testimony. And then there were a couple of really interesting moments where Cohen got asked questions about the investigations in the Southern District of New York, and those are the prosecutors that folks may remember had initially charged Cohen with campaign finance violations and other crimes back in August, and Cohen would sort of stop and say, I can't talk about this because it relates to an ongoing investigation, and he even indicated that he's still cooperating with prosecutors in the hope of potentially his cooperation lessening his sentence in the future. So that was really interesting, sort of suggested we know that prosecutors in New York are looking into the Trump Organization's role in those payments or potential role and the inaugural committee. And so it was sort of interesting to know that Cohen is still working with them and, of course, raises the question about what he might be telling them.
So those are the headlines in terms of legal liability for Trump, which is, I think, perhaps what the Democrats were most interested in today. Perry, you've also been following these investigations. What stuck out to you, either from a legal standpoint or a political standpoint?
From a legal standpoint, Amelia hit about some things that might be different threads, but nothing jumped out to me in terms of what the New York prosecutors are investigating or in terms of what Mueller's investigating, in part because I think at times Cohen hinted, I can't talk about certain things because they're still in legal limbo. So I think he was limited in that. In terms of the politics of it or how Congress handled it, I was struck by two things. One, this is not shocking, but the Republican audience members spent a lot of time attacking Cohen and calling Cohen a liar and pointing out how much he had lied. Didn't really, like, you know, Cohen had some great detail in criticizing the president's behavior and conduct. There wasn't a lot of, like, pushback against that. The Republican members themselves seemed to concede a fair amount of it. And then on the Democratic side, I did get the sense that they didn't really use the time very much, I didn't think, to add any new details to our overall understanding of the Russia story or Trump overall. I'm not sure that – I think Cohen calling his former boss racist and a con man, a cheater, was interesting. But I'm not sure the Democrats necessarily told us much new in the last 4 or 5 hours once Cohen's opening statement was given.
Nate, what's your top-line takeaway?
Can I make a non-top-line point first?
Yeah.
About the BuzzFeed story? Because I'm hearing a lot of people say, oh, this kind of gives BuzzFeed like more of a leg to stand on, and it proves the story was kind of half right. I don't know about that, because I'm looking at the story now, and the key word in that story and the way the story was portrayed by people in the media was the term directed. That the headline says, President Trump directed his attorney Michael Cohen to lie to Congress about the Moscow Tower project. It's the headline of the story. The like fourth word in the story, President Trump directed his longtime attorney. It's the same thing as the headline, basically, right? And they use versions of direct several times. And so to me, that implies something much stronger than an understanding, because an understanding, I think, is more consistent with other reporting, would be less shocking, right? And so, you know, so, and again, I like BuzzFeed. I think they do great work. But like a lot of the reason why that story made a splash is because of the strong headline and language that BuzzFeed used. And if you dialed it back, people would say this is interesting and credible, but it wouldn't have upended the whole news cycle in that way. So the ways in which it was wrong, I think, are relevant here, potentially.
And BuzzFeed has yet to retract that story, and they've referenced other documents that they may have. I mean, are we still waiting at this point to see whether the story is validated, or can we say based on what Cohen told us?
Well, Cohen testified that Trump didn't direct. It was all done by insinuation, and that he could read Trump's code, I think was his term, he said code, and Trump's signals, which I don't doubt. And I don't doubt that the implication in Cohen's mind was fairly strong, but maybe this is a game of telephone where the story gets told and retold, and it gets transformed into something which it wasn't quite, you know, and in a meaningful way wasn't quite, not just like a trivial detail. So I think like it's not more than halfway a defense of BuzzFeed, I think, the testimony today. But the broader headline is like, look, again, I kind of had this like joking headline that I posted about like, it all depends on whether there's additional corroboration for this stuff, because there are quite a few allegations in a lot of areas that are raised, including Cohen saying that, oh, there's this new investigation by the Southern District of New York that I can't even talk about now because I'm a witness in that, and I won't even say kind of what the nature of that is. So it's kind of like there are all these allegations that are made that won't go very far if it's just Cohen's word against Trump's word. I mean, obviously, he did lie to Congress. He lied to protect the president, right? But like, he's not someone who's like a Boy Scout exactly, to put it mildly, although he was, I think, fairly composed today. And so it's kind of like, what foreshadowing do we have today that will matter later on? You know, politically, I don't know. I mean, we're going to see kind of, because there's going to be a paradigm now where Democrats are having lots of investigations on lots of different people. AOC, for example, who was not grandstanding, was very substantive in her 5 minutes today, was laying breadcrumbs for lots of things, such as trying to receive Trump's taxes. You can imagine scenarios where other witnesses are called in the Trump organization. You can imagine scenarios where members of the Trump family is called. How would the president react to that? How would the public react to that potentially? And so in some ways, this feels more to me like a potential preview of coming attractions more than it is one of those days that we'll remember, although it was dramatic at times. I mean, the opening monologue from Cohen about how President Trump is a racist con cheat, you know, that was very powerful language, but I don't think this is going to be a day that we remember as like the most, one of the 5 or 10 most newsworthy days of the Trump presidency. It's more like this is kind of maybe the new normal now, where Democrats, by virtue of having won the House, have the power to call witnesses and hold these hearings. And so I'll be curious to see what the aftermath is of it.
As Nate's referencing, Perry and Amelia, this is the first hearing of what could be many that Democrats hold in the House. First of all, what was the goal of this hearing? And then what does this tell us about what we can expect going forward?
My sense is that Cohen is someone who we know has a close and long time relationship with the president. He's also pled guilty, and he's clearly angry, flustered with Trump at this point. So you sort of knew coming into this that he was going to be pretty direct, pretty frank, and he also was going to add some details, like the stories he told about, you know, driving in Chicago with Trump and Trump talking about how black people are stupid. Like, that's the kind of thing very few people are going to know from having personally talked to Trump. So I think he was a powerful witness in that sense. Like, what does that mean going forward for other hearings? I think you're going to see, I think it's going to depend a lot on which committee we're talking about. Like, the House Intelligence Committee with Adam Schiff, I think, is going to be more focused on kind of Trump, Russia, foreign policy, things that have happened since Trump has been president. I think Jerry Nadler's Committee on Judiciary, I think, will have different focuses as well. So I think we're going to have different flavors of these kinds of anti-Trump hearings by different chairmen who have their own competing agendas and different instincts to some extent. But I think this was a sort of an opening. I think it was a pretty powerful opening because Cohen, like I said, knows so much about the president. And I'm having a hard time imagining other witnesses who are going to be this strong, because there aren't a whole lot of people with this kind of long-term knowledge who've turned against Trump in this way. You can imagine, like, Andrew McCabe having a hearing on Capitol Hill, but he knows something about the investigation of Trump, but now he doesn't really know Trump that well.
I think that's right, Perry, that this is sort of, we shouldn't see this as a kind of one and done. This is sort of an early example of the kinds of hearings that we can see going forward. And in terms of the goal, I think it's important to remember that Cohen really, you know, bringing him in was kind of low-hanging fruit and something that they needed to do early anyway, because he has to report to prison in a few months. But he wanted to testify. And as Perry mentioned, he sort of has this deep and long knowledge of the president and this long history with the president. And so, you know, I think it did make for pretty powerful testimony as these things go. But, you know, there's actually been research on what congressional investigations can do to reduce the president's approval rating, if that is a goal of these investigations. And it's really sustained hearings that seem to make a difference. So I think we can expect to see more of these. The big question is sort of how much trouble Democrats are going to have bringing other people in. We did see a lot of other potential avenues opening up, people mentioning David Pecker or Alan Weisselberg, who's the CFO of the Trump Organization. Whether those people will testify voluntarily, I think, is another question. And the, you know, Congress does sort of have a limited ability to enforce subpoenas. So the Democrats do have to be a little bit careful about how they move forward. Yeah, but I think, you know, today, if we see today as kind of an opening gambit rather than a hearing standing on its own, I think that sort of makes more sense in evaluating whether it was successful or not.
Let's talk a little bit about what Republicans got out of today, or what kind of vulnerabilities were exposed today, if any. But before we do that, let me tell you that today's podcast is brought to you by Upstart. Applying for a loan is a lot like applying for a job that you don't get to interview for. Instead, loan companies make their decisions based off your credit score and history without getting to know the whole you. Now, thanks to Upstart.com, it never has to be that way again. Upstart is revolutionizing the way you borrow money by rewarding you for your job experience and education in the form of a smarter interest rate. Unlike traditional credit underwriting, which could be biased against people with a short credit history, Upstart goes beyond the traditional FICO score when assessing your credit worthiness. The best part, once your loan is approved, the funds will be transferred to you the very next business day. Over 100,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards, student loans, fund their weddings, or make large purchases. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. Hurry to upstart.com/politics to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes 2 minutes, and it won't affect your credit. That's upstart.com/politics. Today's podcast is also brought to you by Bespoke Post. Bespoke Post delivers a monthly themed box of awesome. That's what it's called. It's just a box full of great stuff to upgrade your style, apartment, and life. You pick a theme, style, grooming, cooking, drinking, travel, and Bespoke Post sends you a new box every month that you're guaranteed to dig. Bespoke Post scouts out quality and unique products around the world, delivering them to you every month without high retail markups. Whether you're in search for the perfect drink, a well-kept pad, or jet-setting in style, Bespoke Post helps you get there, improving your life one box at a time. Each box goes for under $50, but has more than $70 worth of unique gear waiting inside for you. To receive 20% off your first subscription box, go to boxofawesome.com and enter promo code POLITICS at checkout. That's boxofawesome.com, promo code POLITICS for 20% off your first box. All right, we're back. Perry, you talked a little bit about Republican strategy in terms of discrediting Cohen. Were they successful, first of all? And then two, did they get any information out of Cohen that actually boosted their cause?
I'm not remembering the quote offhand exactly, but Cohen alleged that Roger Stone told Trump that WikiLeaks is going to leak DNC emails. So there's that potential collusion there. But Cohen, I think at one point actually said, I don't have any information, or I didn't see any kind of connection between Russia and President Trump or Donald Trump at that point. So I think Cohen himself, he actually had several points. He said, I never went to Prague before. There were several points where he actually sort of rebutted. Cohen said there was some Democrat asking, sort of implying Trump might have a love child or something. So Cohen at three or four different points actually did sort of rebut the sort of most outlandish kind of liberal ideas about President Trump and various conspiracies. So I think that was helpful in that there's a few quotes there that I think Republicans will actually come back to and realize Cohen actually was sort of helpful in a few ways. Overall, though, I think that most of the Republican members basically, kept saying Cohen is a liar, you lie before Congress. That was not in dispute beforehand. So I think it was probably useful for them in terms of, like, I assume Fox News will show some of the exchanges. I thought Jim Jordan and Meadows were particularly aggressive in sort of highlighting how much Cohen has lied. So I do think if you're thinking about Trump's 40% who have stuck with him, I think today the Republicans are going to be able to say that in the same way they said Comey, McCabe, and others are not reliable critics of Trump, they're going to make the same charge against Cohen. I think today was pretty effective in that argument.
I mean, Per, I don't know if you're using aggressive as a kind of kind euphemism. I thought Meadows and Jordan were not particularly effective because of, like, their inflection and kind of, like, literally their volume. I did think a lot of the other Republican members were more persuasive, however, because ultimately they have a pretty darn decent argument, which is that this guy did, like, literally lie to Congress, and now he's testifying before Congress. And of course, the complication is that he lied to protect, allegedly, the president, right? So it's a little weird that you're now kind of framing, hey, you tried to protect our president who we're defending, and now you're a liar for. So it's a little weird. But I thought some of the questioners did a better job of, like, trying to separate out, okay, so you also have weird motives or are untoward or unethical in ways that aren't just about protecting the president. So collecting all these big paychecks from peddling influence to Kazakhstan and Korea companies there, recording these conversations, which is legal in New York, but a little unethical. So I think they definitely, like, I know that they had a hard job. Like, this guy does have intrinsic problems with how much you take him at face value. And that's why you need corroboration. You need him to, like, lead you to other clues, which you can then investigate. But I thought Republicans could have, like, modulated kind of, again, literally, like, their volume a little bit and maybe come across as more effective. But I think they basically kind of have one objective, and it's a fairly easy objective, which is to constantly remind people that this guy is an admitted liar before Congress. He's going to jail, and that you have to therefore kind of curb your enthusiasm for drawing too much from what he says.
I mean, something else that Republicans could have tried to do is offer alternative theories for what happened with regards to paying hush money to cover up extramarital affairs or any conversations with Roger Stone with regards to maybe even tax fraud. Were there any points at which we heard Republicans say, this story that Cohen is telling us is not true and this is what actually happened instead?
I can't remember any moments where Republicans seem to be offering a different story about the illegal payments. Nate and Perry, jump in if I'm missing something. But I think that was an area where they kind of didn't want to get into that because Cohen had actually brought sort of documentation around that. I sort of just get the sense that it was enough for Republicans to just attack Cohen because he was so wildly unreliable, or they saw, you know, there's an argument that can be made that he's unreliable, and that they, you know, they sort of didn't need to delve deeper, that kind of maybe would have been opening them up to other problems. But I'm curious what you think, Nathan Perry.
I basically agree with it. I thought Cohen has enough problems where I'm not sure the Republicans had to do much to suggest he's uncredible, at least to conservative-leaning voters. I'm not sure that, you know, every poll I see shows like 40% of people approve of what Trump does, 55% do not. And my guess is the 55% and the 40% numbers were not particularly moved. There were some interesting details today, but I don't think if you're Mark Meadows and you're Jim Jordan, you're worried about the Trump base sticking with you. I think saying Cohen is a liar over and over again was a pretty useful and maybe the only thing you really needed to say.
Yeah, I mean, this is not the day where I wouldn't expect a huge swing in public opinion based on this. You know, look, I think you can say Republicans are, like, often with defending Trump are good at tactics and have no long-term strategy, right? Like, okay, so tactically, very simple message, Cohen is an admitted liar, not trustworthy, has some other unethically untoward things going on, and therefore they're just trying to fight this to a draw. But that doesn't mean that any of the conduct that Trump is alleged to have done didn't happen, or that it did happen for that matter, and they don't really have any strategy to combat those allegations. Potentially. And there's a lot in here. There's a lot, for example, about how Trump knew about the coordination between Roger Stone and WikiLeaks. Does that mean Trump directed, to use the BuzzFeed headline term, that those conversations? I don't think anyone's alleged that yet. But those are worries, potentially. If the SDNY is investigating as yet unknown other unethical conduct, just the kind of sheer volume of things that Trump is, like, kind of engaged in. I mean, you know, one of the impressions I had is, like, there were a couple times when Democrats went fishing for stuff that was salacious, right? There was this exchange about, like, this rumored tape where Trump, allegedly the tape said that Trump was supposed to have struck Melania to have hit her, right? And Cohen not only said, not only does that tape not exist, I don't believe that Trump would ever do anything like that, right? It was a very strong defense of Trump. There were questions about, like, has Trump used substances? And he said no. And so there were, like, a lot of things where, like, the more salacious parts of it were not confirmed. There's not, like, good gossip or whatever coming out of it.
The P tape. That was another one.
P tape.
Didn't know,
right?
The P tape, had never been to Prague, doesn't have a love child.
Yeah. So the more salacious stuff, right? But, like, the ordinary, like, you know, hiding assets, exaggerating assets, underreporting assets, all for different, like, kind of tax and or legal and or PR purposes, which at the very least, works around the edges of the law. And I think Cohen is certainly strongly implying that, like, it's also includes conduct that's both illegal and unethical, right? It's like the ordinary garden variety stuff that is where ultimately, if you wanted to, like, prove wrongdoing by Trump, is probably where you would go. Now, is that the stuff that, like, is going to be salacious enough to result in his impeachment? I don't know. Is it salacious enough to result in voters affecting their calculation about whether they should vote for Trump in 2020? I don't know about that either, right? But it's not the big dramatic P-tape stuff.
I will say, I think this hearing did highlight one of the sort of challenges for Democrats, or just in general for people who think that the president may have engaged in criminal conduct, which is that Cohen had mentioned at one point, like, the guy doesn't email, he doesn't text. I was saying this on the live blog, but I think the Nixon tapes have sort of created a little bit of an unrealistic expectation of the kind of paper trail that there might be. And, you know, something like Trump saying indirectly, talking in code, telling Cohen to lie to Congress, but not directly. I mean, it seems consistent with how he might operate. And so Nate was talking about corroboration. I think that's going to be one of the big challenges, that sort of the big sort of presidency-ending scandal that we think about. For a long time, it was, you know, people saying that Nixon had done things, you know, done bad things, and it was kind of their word against him. And then we get these tapes that where the president is admitting criminal activity on a tape, and it just, you know, it sort of feels like that doesn't seem like we're going to get that here, even if there was criminal activity. And so I think that's just one of the challenges going forward, is what would the corroboration be, and how convincing is it, sort of how dramatic and final would it have to be?
I think that's a great point, which is that Cohen kept saying something along the lines of, I knew to commit illegal acts on behalf of Trump without him really directing or telling me. It was the thing to do. Like, if you're Trump, that's like great to hear. It sounds, I mean, other than writing checks to Cohen, which, you know, Cohen brought the checks, that doesn't look good. But Cohen implied in a lot of ways that Trump is smart enough not to put his name on things. Cohen kind of implied that Don Jr. went to the meeting with the Russians because Dad wants the meeting to happen but doesn't want to be in the meeting. I mean, so if Trump is doing unethical or illegal even things, Cohen left me with the impression that Trump is very careful at times in not leaving a lot of fingerprints. And like Amelia said, we may not get the sort of smoking gun tape we're looking for. And we've known that because we've been looking for 2 years, we haven't found it. But I think now Cohen sort of hinted that Trump is intentionally, you know, sort of tactical in the way he pushes people to do illegal things on his behalf, but doesn't do those things himself.
I agree with Perry's point. I also want to say I was shocked and saddened to learn that the Drudge Report polls are fake.
Oh, yeah. There was a part where Cohen was talking about rigging those polls.
I'm really sad about that. I thought those were extremely reliable polls, and so it's heartbreaking.
We call those on this podcast clickers, right? Those online polls.
We're changing to foals.
Foals.
Faux polls. Foals.
I don't know. I kind of like clickers.
Clickers.
You know, that's also how they give out like People's Choice Awards in journalism.
Oh, yeah.
It's like totally. We've won one of those awards.
We have.
It's totally fake. It was a clicker.
Maybe a clicker's not bad because you're like clicking, like you're like.
All right. So apart from Michael Cohen managing to rig some fake polls, any other final takeaways from the day?
One thing I was struck by was if you listen to the last part of the hearing, if you listen to Congresswoman Tlaib, who basically was very aggressive in all but saying Trump should be impeached, and you know she's the one who's famous for saying we're going to impeach the MF, referring to Trump. And then you saw, and then Elijah Cummings finished the hearing with this almost like, you know, it was almost like he was like giving a sermon at a church about forgiveness and so on. I did watch the hearing and think, like, the Republicans had one message, like, which is that Michael Cohen is a liar, liar, liar. And their leadership was Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan, who were very loyal to Trump and very partisan. And you could hear the Democrats, if you listen to, like, Katie Hill, who's from this purple district, who was trying to be very nuanced, Congressman Tlaib, who was being all but impeach him, Cummings, who was sort of in between, you know, who was trying to be very forgiving of Cohen's actual behavior. I do think you get this split in the Democratic Party between the sort of impeach him immediately people. You have the people who want to like focus on issues only, and you have people in between. I do think the Democrats are going to have trouble sort of, is their goal to push Trump out? Is their goal to really focus on investigations, or are investigations a distraction from legislation and policy and so on? I left the hearing thinking some of the Democrats are nervous against about a real agenda of going after Trump in a way the Republicans are not nervous about defending him, in a way the Republicans in the 1990s were not nervous about going after Clinton.
Part of it also, though, is like a lot of Democrats are using it to grandstand as well. I mean, Tlaib, whatever, you can agree with her or not about Mark Meadows using his black staffer as a political prop or not, but like the fact is, she was not on point relative to Cohen even being there. And so you do have a lot of Democrats who are kind of using their time in their own ways that is quite partisan, too. And so the question is, like, again, we're going to have this setting again. There are going to be a lot of hearings that Democrats are going to call. Some are going to be screaming matches. Some are going to be more substantive. But, like, you can both side this a little bit, which is that, like, the number of people in a Congress where the vast majority of members in both parties represent extremely partisan districts that are not swing districts, then only maybe a quarter or so of members of Congress, or a fifth or a sixth, are actually from plausibly kind of purple swing districts. And so that's going to heavily weight the way that questions are asked.
I think, Perry, your point is really important, though, because one of the things that sort of does make these hearings successful or has in a historical sense is that they present kind of a narrative that is relatively clear and digestible and sort of doesn't go off in a million different directions and is easy for people to follow. And so I think to the extent that the Democrats are sort of, you know, maybe kind of telling different stories or not cohesive on their story, that could be increasingly an issue as we see these hearings going forward.
All right. Well, we will see what happens. As you've all said, this is not the end of these kinds of hearings. But let's leave it here for now. Thank you, Nate.
Thank you.
Thank you, Perry.
Thanks, Galen.
And thank you, Amelia.
Thanks, Galen.
And again, before we go, I'll mention that we have a live show in New York on March 20th. If you want to get tickets or find out more information about that, go to 538.com/live. It'll be plenty of fun. We hope to see you there. My name is Galen Druk. Tony Chow is in the control room. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcasts@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with any questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or a review in the Apple Podcast Store. That's it for now. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.